Why are so many dogs suffering from health issues? Actress Katherine Heigl, who's helped save over 16,000 dogs through her foundation, says she's seeing more issues with dogs' joints, odors, and health than ever before. And after doing a ton of research, she feels there's one place we can look to support any dog's health: their food. So she decided to create something she could actually feel good about feeding her dogs. It's called Superfood Complete. Superfood Complete is made with over 30 of the healthiest ingredients on the planet, including several superfoods vital to your dog's health. Badlands Ranch also sponsors the Jason Debus Heigl Foundation, which has helped rescue thousands of dogs and place them in loving homes. Dogs across America are trying this food and experiencing amazing health benefits. Go to badlandsranch.com/save50 and order right now to get up to 50% off your regular price order with a 90-day money-back guarantee. If you want your dog to experience all these incredible things, go to badlandsranch.com/save50 today.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
And wherever you are, go ahead and share tonight's episode with someone, with a friend. And if you're driving in your car, let someone know where they can hear TMG.
It's time to get on board. TMG is taking off.
Hi, everybody. Welcome to TMG. I'm your host, Travis Patton Sr. I enjoy discovering and sharing real-life moments of inspiration from everyday people. And this show is about finding moments of inspiration for our everyday lives. And look, and if you're going to tell me something, then tell me something good. Hi, everybody, and welcome to a new episode of TMG. I'm your host, Travis Patton Sr. Hey guys, real quick, do me a favor. Don't forget to visit, share, and like our YouTube page. That's Tell Me Something Good with a capital T. And as always, before we get started, I want to give a huge shout out to my biggest fan, my biggest supporter, my lovely wife, Nicole. Hey girl, how you doing? I know you're watching. I know you're listening. Man, tonight's episode is a great one. I know you say, Travis, you say that about each and every episode. That's because I'm excited for each and every episode because I learned something. I know you're going to get some information that's going to help you to inspire your everyday life. And I'm excited about this episode that we're going to have here tonight, guys. Listen, people listening all over the world, if this is your very first time tuning in, your very first time hearing my voice, guys, do me a favor. Type the word new, N-E-W, in the chat. Yeah, maybe somebody introduced you to the show. Maybe you found it by accident. Or maybe you were just coming on for tonight's episode. But if this is your very first time watching this or listening, say the word new. If you're driving in your car and you're not watching this online, say the word new for me, please. Thank you very much. And if you say, well, Travis, listen, I've been watching the show since you've been streaming. I'm a faithful listener of TMG. Let me tell you this. Thank you. I appreciate you. Absolutely, I really do. I'm so glad that you guys are here. I know this energy is palpable. I know you feel it through the airwaves. You feel it streaming. I going to get started with this, guys. Listen, everybody knows that this show is all about finding moments of inspiration in our everyday lives. So if you have an inspiring story that you'd like to share and maybe come on a show, drop me an email at tellmesomething21@gmail.com. And say, Travis, I know someone that has an inspiring story that your listeners and your viewers would love to hear, but I don't want to come on a show. I'm a little camera shy. That's okay. You can still drop us that information at tellmesomething21@gmail.com. And you can even remain anonymous if you'd like. Guys, you know we have a few affiliate sponsors, right? So I want to play their information. So as that information comes along, guys, I want you to go ahead and take notes of the information and how to reach our sponsors. The information will also be in the chat. After that, we're going to dive into the show and we're going to get with it because this is going to be good. Come on in, y'all. I'm here. We're just getting started.
Walmart is a proud associate sponsor of TMG Tell Me Something Good podcast. Please use the special link, bit.ly/tellmesomethinggood, and visit our sponsor. Remember, I may earn a commission when you buy through this link. Fanatics is the place to go for all of your officially licensed sports gear from your favorite sports and sports teams. Use the special link, bit.ly/tellmesomething21, and pay a visit to our sponsor today. Remember, I may earn a commission when you buy through this link.
Breaking your phone sucks. Breaking your phone, then trying to sell it online sucks. Breaking your phone, selling it online, only to find out that the money you'll only get for it sucks. Breaking your phone, selling it online for peanuts, shipping it, and finding out that you got scammed sucks. Gizmogo makes selling your phone fast, safe, and simple by paying you the highest price for your device. And with Gizmogo's free unlimited shipping and price guarantee, millions of people are starting to sell on Gizmogo. Fast, safe, simple. Gizmogo.
There it is, guys. Please visit one of our affiliate sponsors. Guys, listen, the information will be in the chat. And if you say, well, Travis, I'm not watching it. That's okay. That's okay. We'll give the information out to audio so you can have it as well. Guys, tonight's episode, if you have not caught it, tonight's episode, guys, is entitled, Guys, Hit the Books. Yes, tonight's episode is Hit the Books. And I know you're wondering, where in the world is Travis going to go with that one? Guys, school is about to start in about another month or a month and a half somewhere. But tonight's episode, guys, is entitled Hit the Books. I know when I was coming up and we had to go to school and we had to study, we were always told to hit the books. We were always told to go study. We were always told to hit. And listen, if you were like me, everybody studies differently. If you were like me, I used to like to study with music. Anybody else used to like doing that? You used to study with music on. You couldn't study unless your favorite song was on or you had music on. Or maybe you couldn't study unless the TV was on. Or you couldn't. But I know there. Everybody has a different way that they hit the books. Yeah, everybody has a different way. Me, I had to have music. But if you really know me, you know I also had to have some snacks, right? Come on. You just can't hit the books without some snacks. Come on. So everybody has a different way that they hit the books. With me, it was grabbing your favorite snacks from the kitchen or looking for your favorite pen or pencil and choosing your favorite place to go. And yes, even getting your favorite music so you can hit the books. Listen, these are just a few things of what some would say are requirements before hitting the books or studying, right? But hitting the books looks different depending on who you might ask. And how does it impact your children as they are preparing to return to school? Guys, listen, Our special guest today will discuss why hitting the books means something different for each parent or educator and how it impacts your child. Guys, do me a favor. Give a huge TMG welcome for our very special guest, Emmanuel Blanchard. Emmanuel, what's up? How you doing?
Hey, what's going on, Travis? And I'm telling you, I'm excited to be here on Tell Me Something Good. This is an exciting moment. And thank you so much for having me on your amazing, amazing podcast. So I'm giving you your flowers. Thank you so much, man.
Hey, man, we appreciate you. I am 100% honored and humbled that you're here. Absolutely humbled, man. You could be doing a thousand things, but you took our time for TMG. Thank you so much, man. I told you this is going to be good, Emmanuel. Buckle up, y'all. Here we go for this ride. Emmanuel, I don't know about you. I know you're an educator. But I know, man, when I used to study about hitting the books, I had different ways. I had to have my music. I had to have my food. Everybody hits the books differently. And you are absolutely dedicated and driven to these principles and ideas of having a strong education. I know you are because I know what you do. But what feeds your passion for education?
I mean, that's a really easy question for me to answer. I am West Indian. Okay. My parents came from the Caribbean from the 1970s. And, you know, when I was growing up, they were very clear about why they left home. And it's really important for me to stress this because I think sometimes people don't, especially in 2024, people often don't understand the stories of immigrants, what it means to leave home. And what it meant for my parents to leave home was it was very likely that major life events, for example, their parents getting older, siblings and other relatives and friends, it was very likely that they were never going to see those things.
Right.
There had to be a major why they left home. And they created the second home here in the United States. And I'm from New York City, in particular in New York City. So shouting out New York City.
New York in the building!
718 in the building. So for my parents, the major reason why they left their home was because of education. They had four kids, I being the last of the four. They wanted their kids to have the ability to have an education. Mm-hmm. And so just growing up and seeing that and hearing the stories of my grandfather who had a third grade education and my parents making this ultimate sacrifice, leaving everything that they knew behind and to do it all for the name of education, it really meant a lot for me. And the other reason why education is such a big deal is because not every country in the world has a public education system. Not every country in the world has a system dedicated to offering education pretty much for free for people in their particular city, their state, and their country. And unfortunately, my parents, what actually became fortunate for me, my parents did not have that kind of system growing up. And so they wanted that to be an opportunity for their kids.
Wow. So you would say education has really driven your entire life. A lot of changes, major changes were made because of education. A lot of, and not just, you know, we're not talking about moving across, you know, across town. We're talking about relocating to an entire different country and becoming citizens of another country for the need of education. So the importance of education is has real roots in you other than we just want to get a degree. No, this has something. It motivated your parents to make a whole decision for the entire family.
Absolutely.
Four kids. You're the last one. Yeah. Hey, guys, I know you're enjoying yourself here. We're moving to the United States.
No, absolutely. I mean, and if you think about it, that required leaving family behind, like when my grandparents passed away, each one of my grandparents passed away. My parents were not in the physical presence of my grandparents passing away. I had very little contact with my grandparents. I had very little contact with my home country. And that was all for the sake of, we want to give you this educational opportunity because we understand that if we stay here where there is very little educational opportunity
right.
in their home country, your future has pretty much already been determined. And so the reason why I'm so passionate about education is that oftentimes we don't realize that when we have children, we are making decisions for them well before they enter into a school building. And their paths in terms of future occupations, mm-hmm. where they might possibly live, I mean, so much, and this is really the root of my passion for education, so much of where we go 20, 30, 40 years is determined by educational decisions.
Wow. Guys, did you hear that? Listen, it made you move. It was your why. I want to ask everybody this question that's watching, that's listening. What makes you move? Yeah, what? I want to know what makes you move. You can type it in chat. You can say it to yourself. You can say, well, nothing. Yeah, something makes you move. There is something that will make you move against all odds. There is something that, listen, because his parents, your parents, Emmanuel, they moved against all odds. They had no idea that things would work out good. They had no idea whether it was going to work out good or bad. They just moved. There, you got to have something that's going to make you move. Something has got to be your reason why. Man, that's an incredible story, Manuel. What recent changes, though? We're talking about education, and you gave us your backstory, and you gave us the reason why. And we understand why education is so important to you. We understand it's your passion, and we understand that passion drives people. You listen, I don't let passion drives people. Yeah, I know you can say, well, it's that paycheck that I get every day. I've seen people change jobs that make less money because they went where their passion was. Passion drives people. Yeah, I drop that in a nugget. You can type that in chat, say it to yourself. You can retweet it if you want to, but passion drives people. So that being said, what recent changes have you seen in the way of education, education is approached, has helped to make you become more involved or determined to stay this course?
I think, you know, I've always been passionate about education. I had the privilege of going to some really great schools. I went to Columbia University, which was an amazing, amazing experience. It really opened my eyes. Graduating from a university that's older than the country itself, and being one of the few people of color, one of the few Black people to be part of my class, that to me was a real transformative experience. But more recently, one of the things that really spurred on my education activism has been some of the movements that we've seen to destabilize, to defund public education. Another more recent phenomenon that's encouraged me to really become more of an activist with regards to education has become book banning, in part because not every book is being banned. There are certain books that are being banned. There are certain books that are being weaponized, not for the contents of the book themselves. And I think this is something that often transpires, is that sometimes we fall for the okey-doke. So if you're a fan of boxing, remember that Muhammad Ali had the rope-a-dope punch where he made you look right, but he was going to hit you with your left, hit you with his left. The recent book bans have really mobilized me because it's inspired and enraged certain groups of people for one particular reason, without them realizing that's being used to weaponize, to defund public education. Because really, every aspect of life can become an industry. And more recently, public education has become the next frontier mm-hmm. for corporations and for private industries to kind of see how can we capitalize to take away public dollars from education and funnel those dollars into corporate mechanisms and corporate hands, so that we can actually get those dollars. And a lot of people don't realize that it all starts by creating a lack of trust in public education.
Mm. Yeah, if I can get you to not trust this institution and to tell you that what my way is better or my way is the best way, you'll trust in that and you'll abandon.
Absolutely.
So what I'm hearing is that you're noticing or you're identifying where it appears to be where we are, people are seeming to abandon the public school system, where they're not much has been invested into it. Teachers aren't being paid, but they should be paid. The quality of education could be better. And we can you could Google search and see where the United States stands across the world education wise. You can look at a Google search where your state is compared to other states in the United States. And so it seems like you have identified where it appears to be in a sense of abandoning some schools or the quality of education and the methodology that teachers are doing. So different ways of being abandoned. And that impacts how our students are hitting the books. It impacts what they are learning. It impacts what they're gathering the information from the books. So they don't begin to look like the other students who are a world away, who's getting the same stuff, but they're not getting the same quality of that same information. So it makes a huge difference. The quality of the information that you get will impact what you do, the decisions you make. Let me say it again. The quality of the information you get will impact the decision that you make. If it's bad quality, promise you, your decision is going to be bad.
Absolutely.
It happens. A lot gets passed around. We were talking about when you talk about the quality of information and you talk about different schools and methodology, you're talking about different school systems. You brought that up. You're talking about that. You said, you had the opportunity to go to a great school that was older than the country itself. So when you talk about things like that, you talk about different individuals and the diversity of schools. And mm-hmm. we hear a lot get passed around about diversity in education. It does. You can turn on the news, you can look at social media, like this pastor about the diversity in education. That could be anything from cultural diversities, socioeconomic diversities, teaching methodologies, and other things. Those different things that can make things different. When we say diversity, we're not just talking about how the classroom looks. We're talking about how the classroom is presented. We're talking about how the information is presented. So when you talk about diversity in education, before you shoot it down, we're not just talking about how the students look. We're not just talking about the diversity of students that attend the class. We're talking about the diversity of information that's in the class. You can say, well, we're passing along information that we've used for 5 years, but what about information that needs to be updated? The mm-hmm. diversity of information. What about taking the information that we've had for 5 years and compare it to the information that is now being taught? The diversity of information. So the methodologies that teachers have been using. Now, let me ask you, as an educator, who gets to witness diversity firsthand? You're an educator, so you get to mm-hmm. see this stuff firsthand played out. When you hear that word, diversity, when you hear that word, what comes to mind?
Well, what comes to mind for me as a Black man in education who's been in it for well over 20 years, it's unfortunately what a lot of people don't think about. Diversity is, there are certain words in the English language that are politically charged words. Mm-hmm. That as soon as we hear them, because of the cultural context and the cultural biases loaded within our larger cultural context, we often start to think of perhaps the most loaded version of that word.
Yeah.
So because of the US's history, it's very difficult history, for example, with issues of race.
Mm-hmm.
When we hear the word diversity, for some of us, our sensors go off and we shut down.
Correct.
And we don't realize that the English language is loaded with words that are not necessarily always political, but they can be complex in nature.
Mm.
So often, especially in this charged, you know, the past 10 plus years, this charged political atmosphere, when we hear the word diversity, many of us default to racial diversity.
Correct. Absolutely. Absolutely.
And because of the history of the country, we often see it simply as a white and or black issue. Diversity for me as an educator does not, an educator of color, does not solely speak to black and or white. One of the root issues that we have with respect to diversity in education is also, for example, diversity with regards to gender.
There you go.
For example, if you were to look at your schools, could you speak to the range of experiences that kids have with regards to genders? Let's say, for example, in your elementary school, if you were to ask your son or your daughter in an elementary school who they have as a teacher, 9 times out of 10 in elementary school, it's going to be a woman.
Yep.
And what people don't realize, because we're so preoccupied and so we don't understand our own preoccupations with our biases, is that the word diversity becomes a dirty word, but you don't realize that because of a lack of diversity represented in the teaching pool in elementary schools, that sometimes creates a chasm for young boys in elementary school classrooms.
Correct.
So for example, if you want the statistical data to Google or to look up, take a look at who becomes classified in special education classrooms in elementary schools. It's often little boys. And why is that? Sometimes because it might be there's this bridge that can't be crossed, or there might be this valley that can't be crossed between the person who's standing in the front of the classroom and the kids in the classroom. So it's not just, and again, we're in an election year, you know, and antennas are up for different words.
Sensitive for different words.
You're incredibly sensitive. And does diversity mean, to some extent, racial diversity? Yes, but it's not the whole of what diversity means.
Absolutely.
I'll give you one quick other one really quickly. When I'm doing, you know, consulting work and I'm speaking to different power brokers in education, and the word diversity comes up, I ask the power brokers what diversity means. And I can often see that they struggle because they go to the white or black and they're like, that's the only way in which they can see it. I'll give you another example. Another major, major issue in education is that for many school districts, we view newer, younger teachers as the holy grail of education. Sometimes what diversity means is someone who's not been in education for 15, 20 years, but they're coming into the profession at the age of 40 or at the age of 50.
Right.
And they've had life experiences outside of the classroom. But often the reason why, and here's the secret, because again, there's a difference between cooking in your home kitchen and cooking in a professional kitchen. I've been cooking in the professional kitchens of education for 20 years plus now. And I can tell you what happens behind the scenes. One of the reasons why school districts often shy away from an older teacher is because they're more expensive. So a lot of education isn't driven by what's best for students. A lot of education isn't driven by what's scientific.
Interesting.
A lot of education is not driven by best practice. It's driven by cost.
Wow. Wait a minute. So we could have a teacher, an educator, who has more experience in life, and then could take that same information and present it to our students in a better way, in a better quality way, but because they cost more, I won't do it.
Travis, I will tell you this. A lot of school districts want Bentley, Maserati, Porsche educations for dollar store prices.
Yeah, that's never happened.
We won't do it for the national defense system.
But we'll do it for our students.
We'll do it for students. we'll go to Dollar Tree.
Either the Dollar Tree, y'all.
we'll use Dollar Tree cost for education. And one of the reasons why is because culturally, if it's not something that's tangible, many of us have a hard time rationalizing the long-term expenditure for it.
If we can't feel it, see it, or an immediate response from it, What a lot of people I learned, Emmanuel, is this. If people don't get an immediate response, then its value is lost.
Absolutely.
With people, the longer it takes, the lesser value it has. No, people, we have to change that to say, okay, you know what? This may take some time, but it's still valuable. If people don't have that immediate gratification, then it loses its value immediately.
Can I jump in here for a second? Go.
If people are dieting now more than ever before, then why are nearly 1 in 3 American adults overweight? Dr. Gundry, who's helped thousands lose weight and feel younger and healthier than ever, says most people are not getting enough fat-burning MCTs from their food. MCTs are a special kind of compound that, instead of turning into fat when you consume it, turns into ketones, which is a chemical that breaks down the excess fat in your body. So, by getting more MCTs in your diet, you essentially flip a switch that puts your body in caloric bypass mode, which can flush out excess fat and calories. And he's created an easy way for you to activate caloric bypass right at home. It's called MCT Wellness. This powerful blend of fat-flushing MCT powders and antioxidant-rich polyphenols is designed to help you unlock your body's fat-burning, energy-producing potential. What's even better is that it's a delicious drink. I love how incredible it tastes. All you do is add a scoop to water, enjoy, and watch as you start feeling slimmer and more energized. So, if you want to experience a quick, easy, and effective way to melt pounds fast, go to GundryMD.com/energy and order right now to get up to 53% off your regular price order with a 90-day money-back guarantee. Again, that's GundryMD.com/energy. Why are so many dogs suffering from health issues? Actress Katherine Heigl, who's helped save over 16,000 dogs through her foundation, says she's seeing more issues with dogs' joints, odors, and health than ever before. And after doing a ton of research, she feels there's one place we can look to support any dog's health: their food. So she decided to create something she could actually feel good about feeding her dogs. It's called Superfood Complete. Superfood Complete is made with over 30 of the healthiest ingredients on the planet, including several superfoods vital to your dog's health. Badlands Ranch also sponsors the Jason Debus Heigl Foundation, which has helped rescue thousands of dogs and place them in loving homes. Dogs across America are trying this food and experiencing amazing health benefits. Go to badlandsranch.com/save50 and order right now to get up to 50% off your regular price order with a 90-day money-back guarantee. If you want your dog to experience all these incredible things, go to badlandsranch.com/save50 today.
Your time and expertise are valuable, making focus one of the most important resources to have at work. These days, professionals spend nearly half the work week on written communication, and it can be difficult to stay on task with all the emails and documents you have to get through. With Grammarly as your AI writing partner, you can stay focused and quickly get through your work with relevant, real-time suggestions wherever you write. It works across 500,000 apps and websites, so it can help with everything, from brainstorming presentation ideas to sounding more confident and persuasive in emails and reports. For 15 years, Grammarly has offered best-in-class communication support and enterprise-grade security on a business model that doesn't sell your data. 93% of professionals report that Grammarly helps them get more work done. Download Grammarly for free at grammarly.com/podcast. That's GRAMMARLY.com/podcast.
Go for it.
I'm so sorry. And this is especially true with education. And like, I see this in the politics of education, where a lot of times a lot of us as Americans don't understand the value of investing, not just in our own children's education, but our neighbor's education.
Say that.
It's like we can't understand, unless it financially benefits me.
Me? I won't do it.
I won't do it. Not understanding, for example, in the United States, we actually have an economic crisis that's already started, mm-hmm. where we have baby boomers who are retiring. And there are not enough quality jobs for Generation Xers and millennials yep. to actually financially support the Social Security system. And the healthcare systems that baby boomers are retiring into. And so this is part of like this kind of psychology uh-huh. that really creates structural foundational cracks that like you can't just think about education personally. How does it benefit me solely? That's not how public education works, especially when we look at it economically.
Here's the thing. Everyone's tax dollars paying for it.
Absolutely.
So, your neighbor's tax dollars is paying for your child's education, and your tax dollars are paying for their child's education. Might as well give them the best.
Absolutely.
Might as well give them the best. So, you brought up something about diversity, mm-hmm. and we're conditioned in this country because of this history. We're conditioned to immediately go to race. We're conditioned to go black, white, white, black. We automatically go to that black, white, Hispanic, Latino. We automatically go to race because of this culture, sometimes in certain regions is stronger than others. But we automatically go that diversity is more than that. When I mentioned socioeconomic diversity,
absolutely,
I'm talking about children who are from a home or household who aren't very familiar with a lot of economics, and things are tough for them where they see their parents are struggling. And that information, when you're trying to teach that child who, when they go home, all they hear is bills are getting paid, bills and struggle, finance and money. All you hear is that child from that standpoint to them, economics school is not a major thing to them. Making money becomes a major thing. Getting a job, helping my mom won't have to struggle, my dad won't have to struggle. Those become major things to them. If you find a child from different socioeconomic backgrounds, that education, the methodology of teaching must change. When you talk about diversity, we talk about diversity of methodologies of teaching. You can teach the same information that you've had for 20 years. Doesn't mean you have to be taught the same way.
Absolutely.
You got Gen X's around here, and I don't know all the Gens, X's, all those individuals. They're learning things differently, and you have to be able to. You have AI. You have to be able to catch up with that and find out where that's going with that. Hitting the books. Yep. Hitting the books. And I know we think about students hitting the books. Hitting the books. A lot happens behind the scenes, and you mentioned you talked us about preparing that plate, you know, you're cooking in the kitchen of education, so you know what's happening behind the scenes. A lot happens, and you mentioned also that a lot happens with our students and our children before they even step on campus, before they get their first book, before they take their first test. A lot happens before the school year begins. I want you all to understand, your child may be going to school in the next month or two, but a lot happens is a lot of decisions are being made prior to them going to school. Before they even hit the books, decisions are being made. So a lot happens, Emmanuel, behind the scenes before a child picks up a book or study or before they solve their first long division math problem. Mm-hmm. Why is it important that parents and educators understand some of the decisions that are being made behind the scenes of a school, for example, who the school superintendent is, what recent policies impact their child? Why is it important that parents and educators understand what's going on as well?
It's the idea of, you know, when I go to a restaurant, you know, and I don't like making the comparison in education that, you know, parents and students are customers. That's a very dangerous comparison, because really in education, when I'm going to like a restaurant I can tell the restaurant, I can tell the waiter, this is what I want, this is what I want. And the person will work according to their ability to construct what I'd like. However, there are certain guidelines to which I have to adhere. I can't go to a seafood restaurant and then simply demand, like, you know, I want you to go, you know, farm something that's illegal. There are certain rules. Whereas in education, because so many school districts operate with the consumer model, what they really forget is that one of the fundamental ground rules of education historically has always been that the community works in partnership, not in consumership, but in partnership with the school. Why? Well, because to a certain extent, you have to accept that educators are professionals, you know, and I've had this experience throughout my 20-year career where I've had to like remind people, like, I'm in this with the best interest at heart and in mind for the students who are coming through my classrooms. The reason why it's important, with that being said, the reason why it's important for parents and educators to be aware of policies is because sometimes, and this often actually happens in education, is that a lot of problems emerge, and we're often misdiagnosing the root of the issues.
Mm.
For example, you know, when reading scores come out, and you know, every state has their own version of reading scores and math scores.
Right.
And often, if the scores are not on par with where people believe they should be, the fastest stated cause of that is, well, there must be something wrong with the teachers, or there must be something wrong with, you know, the school. And then that tens of thousands of dollars, sometimes hundreds of thousands of dollars, will be poured around, and people will continually spend money. They'll levy accusations. There'll be a couple of meetings without properly diagnosing what is actually at the core of the fundamental issue.
Mm.
And I think this has been like a major problem of education in the past 10, 15 years, particularly in the social media era. There is this capitalism, there is this cottage industry that people have now found to exploit education for gain.
Hmm.
So for example, I just want to give you a really quick example, because we're now actually starting to see a reckoning with this particular issue. About 10 years ago, more affluent school districts started purchasing one-to-one computing devices, things like iPads.
Right.
Chromebooks, right? What was the actual scientific research done to see if those sorts of computing devices would actually be beneficial for students? Little to none. The research was not available at the time. But dollars were spent to purchase these computing devices. The reason why I bring this up is because we have to be cautious and we have to be careful in education,
mm-hmm.
to understand what we're doing and why we're doing it. Are we purchasing these devices because it looks cool, because it buys us political brownie points, or because they're educationally sound? And that's often the issue that I find in education, is that often we're rushing to do things simply because it looks like it's the next wave. It looks like it's the next trend. Meanwhile, we have kids whose reading levels have dropped precipitously.
Wow.
We have kids whose social anxiety levels have skyrocketed. Cases of bullying have gone up exponentially. And so I think this is one of the fundamental reasons why parents have to be really aware of what is it that you're signing up for. What is it in terms of policies?
Exactly.
One last example. Who are the people making the decisions?
That's the main one. That's the main one. Who's your school superintendent that your child's going to?
Who's the board of education?
Who's on the board of education? What are their stance on certain things?
For whom are they making policies?
And who's made the last? What was the last policy made by your school district?
Yeah.
So when we talk about hitting the books, a lot of people need to hit the books.
Yeah.
Let me ask you this question. I know you and I were talking earlier before the show, and we had a good conversation before the show, guys. BIPOC, B-I-P-O-C. BIPOC. Tell us about BIPOC and the work they do. What does BIPOC stand for? And what is the work they do?
BIPOC, BIPOC, Black Indigenous People of Color. I am part of the BIPOC community. And this term really didn't, it wasn't really popular when I first got into education.
I can see why.
because it's like shorthand. But within the last 5 to 10 years, it's become more of a acronym that's become more commonplace in education. Why? Wow. Well, here's the thing. And I get this all the time. I'm in the field of history. So I teach history. I teach social studies. And social studies today is one of those fields where everyone is an expert, but no one knows nothing. Everyone has an opinion. But, you know, they haven't read a book or they haven't been in a classroom.
Right.
Okay. Here's the thing about social studies, right? Anyone who's a historian knows that history is constantly evolving. Right. I had the honor of taking a class with Professor Eric Foner, and he opened his class, and he's a Civil War expert, a Reconstruction expert. He is the preeminent scholar on the Civil War.
Okay.
And our very first class session, he asked this question. He asked, when was the last time a book has been written on the Civil War? And it was actually, the answer was, we thought, oh, it must have been like, you know, Civil War is 1861, 1865. Oh, it must have been like 1900. Wrong. There was several new books that came out the year we were taking the class. Why? Stories are always being explored and revealed, and different ways of looking at an account is being unearthed. So, for example, many of the initial Civil War texts that were written weren't looking at it from the perspective of slaves. They weren't looking at it from the perspectives of the newly freed slaves.
Right.
The newly freed slaves. A lot of texts in the late 1800s, late 19th century, they weren't looking at the Civil War from the perspective of Native Americans who were there.
Who were there doing all this? Listen, during all this that was happening, there's another group of indigenous people.
Yeah.
There's an indigenous people that were here in the middle of all this war. How did this impact them?
So that's important if you think about it. So what BIPOC is, it's a more recent term, but in, let's say, for example, the field of social studies or history, it allows for individuals whose voices have often been missing from the canon.
Gotcha.
Who've been missing from the curriculum to offer a new set of lenses, a new set of eyes on something. And this has largely become more popular in the United States in the 1970s. So if you're old enough, you might remember, for example, there was a rise in like Native American stories or the Native American perspective. You started seeing more Native Americans on TV in the 1970s.
I grew up during that time. Are you trying to tell me I'm old? I didn't say that.
But the BIPOC experience is really important because it's often been missing in academia. It's often been missing in academics. And we're now starting to see a new generation of Black, Indigenous, people of color who are forcing their way into the conversation and saying, don't forget our particular voice in the history of X or Y or Z.
So it is the voice for Black people and Indigenous individuals whose voices have been forgotten and voices overlooked when it comes to terms of education. Goes back to that diversity conversation that we were having earlier. It includes more than just Black and white. There were Indigenous people living on this continent, guys. I know. Let me ask you this, because I'm curious. What are some recent things that are being done? Yet that being said, what you said about the voices being not heard or not properly represented, what are some recent things that are being done to increase this awareness, educate parents, teachers, and students, and others on the importance of this work?
I live in New York City, and one of the things that you're seeing, for example, in the Department of Education, is representation of holidays. And I know this is like a thorny one for many people, but, you know, so for example, Diwali. So you're actually seeing the incorporation of groups who are a large portion of a city or a town's population, and that group's rituals and holidays and expressions and celebrations being woven into the fabric of the larger communities. Calendar, like, that's important. Like, you know, if you are 20 to 30% of a population and your celebrations, your holidays are not considered important and the institutions keep on running, but for others, you know, let's say for Christmas or, you know, the Jewish holidays, those days will shut down everything. That is a way in which we're seeing certain things change, for example, in New York City, for example. So like, who controls the calendars? Because, you know, if I can't go to school because I'm celebrating a holiday that's really important to my heritage, my identity, but yet I'm being told it's not important enough because I don't represent a faction large enough within my within the larger community, that speaks extremely loudly.
Absolutely.
Another part of it is we're seeing this, depending on where you live, is the curriculum. Listen, yeah, this is a huge space. This is a growing space. Mm-hmm. You know, curriculum, one of my biggest issues that I have when people speak about education, particularly for those who are not in the field, is they often don't really understand what education is. Education is not about, I go to school, I get a job. That's not what education is. A kindergarten teacher cannot predict what the future industries will be in 16 years. So if your philosophy with regards to education is, I'm sending my kid to school and my kid better get a great job after they leave that school, you're putting a whole lot of pressure
on that kid and a
first grade teacher. Like, the kid, the first grade teacher who was teaching in like the late 1990s could not predict that AI would be an industry 20 years. Like, that's why we have to be careful. We have to honor the professionals and understand that we're working in partnership with them. But I say all of that to say that when it comes to the opportunities, there's also a growing way in which we can honor the diversities in our classrooms.
Absolutely.
It's an opportunity. It's a, you know, like, I, if I didn't see, you know, and I'll just shout him out because he passed away in 2004. Mm-hmm. The one Black male teacher that I had in my K-12 experience, his name was Dr. James R. Green. He was incredibly important for me. And I came from a very rich, I came from a two-parent household. Mm-hmm. I had siblings who all went to college before I even like thought about college. So like, I was going to go to college. I was going to be okay.
It was already there.
It was already there. Like, my path was already laid for me. Like, there was no chance of me being a failure. But the reason why seeing that person was so important is that, and I was going to be fine, he unlocked different parts of me, mm-hmm, that may not have been unlocked. He's the teacher who said to me, he was my band teacher. He said, why don't you actually compose music for your fellow classmates? He saw something in me, a diverse talent in me, and unlock that. And that's what's necessary. Diversity, you know, we make diversity into this power struggle.
Right.
It's a tool.
Let me help you guys out something real quick. When you hear the word diversity, you know, you hit it on the head. Diversity is a tool that unlocks things in you. If you ate chocolate cake all the time, then someone said, hey, look, I got some coconut cake for you. You try that, all of a sudden, now your taste buds are awakened. It has unlocked something. A lot of us, we remain, I'm going to say this, look at me in the camera, listen to me. A lot of us are remaining where we are because we have not been unlocked. There's nothing wrong with you. You're not a bad person. You're not terrible. You just need to be unlocked. There's opportunities inside of you. It just need to be unlocked. Like his band teacher told him to orchestrate music for his students. Who can you orchestrate something for? Maybe the answer that somebody else needs is locked inside of you, and it just needs to be unlocked. I believe that there are some people listening right now that says, I'm ready to be unlocked. There's some things inside you that just need to be unlocked. The reason we keep seeing the same things is because we haven't been unlocked. The reason we think the way we're thinking, because we haven't been unlocked. Listen, let me go ahead and say this to you. If you felt you had to be the same way all your life, I'm going to go ahead and give you permission. You can be unlocked. Yeah, you may have been waiting for permission, but you've been unlocked. And the reason, Emmanuel, things continue to happen the way they do culturally is because we remain locked into a way of thinking. We don't let diverse ways of operating, diverse ways of doing, diverse ways of approaching things, diverse ways of processing information. Your daddy processed it that way. It didn't work out. Won't you try processing it a different way? And it will unlock some things about you. What is something? I know.
Listen.
I just want to be unlocked. If I had to be around the right people, sometimes it takes the right conversations. It takes the right relationship to just unlock some things.
Yeah.
I know. I get it. I know. Emmanuel, mention this. Ask this of all my guests. Mention this question. What is something? What is something you would like to say to encourage listeners to the about the importance of finding ways to be involved in their child's education?
I guess that there are two things that I would want to share. The first is education is not about jobs. That's the first thing. The minute you make your child's education about what, you know, what career are they prepping my kid for, is the second you miss out what education is all about. The reason why I'm saying this, and you know, I'm actually working on a project regarding this. Remember, and a lot of people actually don't know this, but public schools are actually relatively new. They appeared in like the late 1800s, depending on your state, the early 1900s. So we're about four or five generations into public schooling. We're still trying to figure it out.
Right.
We're still trying to figure it out. Now, the reason why I bring this up is because even though public education is about four or five generations old, there are schools that predate public schools.
Wow.
These were the schools like Exeter Academy, Phillips Exeter Academy, Andover. These were, please folks, look them up, Google them. These were the schools that the leaders of the country, that they went to before there were public schools.
Mm-hmm.
And what they were trained in, the curriculum for these schools was all about thought. It was about learning how to think. And then these kids who went, these future leaders who went to your Andovers and your Phillips Exeters, they went on to schools like Harvard. Harvard is the oldest school in the nation. Before there was a country, there was a Harvard University.
Wow.
And what they were taught as part of the curriculum at Harvard were subject matter that required critical thought. Not regurgitation, but thought, challenging what you think you know.
I like that.
So that's the first thing I would say is that, listen, you want to create an environment where your children are critical thinkers. And the second thing that I would say is don't fixate on the grades. I think that we've become a society that fixates on things but not necessarily understand them.
Correct.
You know, I can tell you right now, grades actually don't mean what you think that they mean. They are very complex. I want kids to get good grades, but I want them to think. But I will also say this. In so much as I don't want parents and kids to fixate on the grades, I want them to fixate on the thought.
Right.
I also want them to understand that education, this is my last, this is the last point that actually is coming up right now. Education, and this is something I say all the time, is critical to every aspect of our lives. For example, and I don't know if people realize this, education seeps into things like, you know, your health insurance.
Correct.
Education seeps into things like, you know, your car insurance. You ever wondered why when you're filling out car insurance, they ask you about your highest level of education? It seeps into your credit score.
Yep. Like, what does this got to do with my car insurance?
So I want you to understand that, you know, the paradigm or the model of education that you think that you understood can shift, it can change, but education is also an investment in yourself.
That's right. That's right. Exactly. Exactly. It is absolutely a self-investment. I told you guys this was going to be a good episode. I don't know if you thought I was playing or not, but this was an absolutely amazing episode. Guys, I want to thank Emmanuel Blatcher Jr. for showing up today and showing out, giving us some great information. Hit the books, guys. Thank you so much, Emmanuel, for being here, man. Guys, listen. The diversity in a school will significantly impact the quality of education students receive. Impacting this can be factors such as socioeconomic factors. So students with various economic backgrounds are not impacted by it. Now, when we talk about hitting the books, it's something we all can benefit from just a little bit more. Guys, thank you so much for tuning in. And it's about that time, guys. You know how we do it. As always, it's been a real blast. Listen, I want to thank our very special guest, Mr. Blanchard, for being here today. What's up, Mr. B? I'm so excited. Listen, you can tune in right here each week, every Thursday, 6:30 p.m. Central, 7:30 p.m. Eastern to listen to the show. Or you can stream on your favorite platform like Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, and so many more. Guys, we got to get out of here. But as always, in parting, if you're going to tell me something, then tell me something good. I'm out of here, y'all. I got to go. Peace. Let me boost this up. I know y'all want to hear.
How do people feel about getting Big Fitness Energy at Planet Fitness for $15 a month? They feel as thrilled as a kid the first summer they're tall enough to ride the roller coaster. That's right. When you join Planet Fitness right now, you get access to tons of equipment and free fitness training in a clean and spacious club. Don't wait. Join the judgment-free zone today for that all-day energy. Download the free Planet Fitness app and join today for $15 a month.
Hurry. Deal ends September 12th. Join today for $15 a month.
See Home Club for details.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices. Plus, extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. And up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.